Honey, I blew up the business.
Oh, man, I think we're good to go, mate. Here we go. Here we go. It was me adapter that was fucked. There is the mic. Let's get it. Dan fucking Kirby, I'm in the game. Let's have it.
Suddenly the Northeast's loudest man.
Burst into fucking life. Come on.
Oh, we're going to start the podcast here. That's the start. Now,
I'm in the game. I'm back on the scene like a young Roy Keane. Let's do it. I'm in there like swimwear.
For everybody's benefit, not only is this man, Mr. Paul Moore, the most inspiring...
Ah, stop it!
...badass in the UK, he's also the Northeast's loudest man.
I am.
Yeah, and he's flexing right now.
I'm not loud, I just don't have air. I just don't have volume control. Yeah, even I'm loud or deaf.
He actually does sound a bit loud. I wouldn't shout too much into that mic, actually.
All right, mate, let's back it off. Let's back that volume off.
Here we go. There we go. Good. Well, I think we should start there just before there, because I think there's good energy. And we like a good energy. I need waking up on a Tuesday, and this is when we're recording it in the morning. But listen, Paul is a total legend, and I've known him for a few years, and he's a legend prior to knowing me. My personal trainer was like, you know Paul Moore?
Really?
Yeah, for sure. And not only is he a legend in his own lifetime, he's a coach, a mentor, an inspirational speaker, hosting a whole suite of coaching programs that helps married men with businesses improve every aspect of their lives. Plus, it includes, and I've seen video, kicking the crap out of each other on a beach in South Shields.
Yes.
Yeah, which I like looking at. He's got 200 people, I believe, in your coaching program now. Is that right?
Close at about 800, 900.
Is it? Yeah. On the podcast. So anyway, 900. And he also worked with women. Good lad. So, and he's been proven to be top notch because he was UK Master Coach of the Year 2019. And have you won it again since then?
And 2020, I won it as well.
Yeah,
First person ever to do that.
Really? So 2 years in a row. What a legend. Public speaker, author, podcast host of the incredible podcast. Check out Paul Mort Talks Shit, interviewing the likes of Tyson Fury and Ant Middleton. And not only that, this geezer is in the house, well, the specific Tyne Theatre and Opera House in Newcastle on October 21st for his first ever live one-man show.
Mate, and my head's fucking swelling by the second here. Keep going.
Well, listen, I'm making you feel really good about yourself before I bring you crashing back down to earth.
You give me the old shit sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. It's a nice slice of bread here, mate.
I love it, mate. Is it sourdough?
It's beautiful sourdough, and I'm about to put the filling in right now.
I love it. Let's go with the filling. Let's get the shit out of the way.
So, listen, a real brief overview, and that is actually just a brief overview for anybody who doesn't know him, so please check him out. But Paul's got a really interesting story and a really interesting backstory. What I want to find out, though, is that 34-year-old Paul Moore, which was a few years ago now, sounds like a right laugh. He sounds like a totally great geezer.
Well, he was on a weekend.
Living in Marbella in a four-bedroom house with a private pool, living large, successful business. You had it made, mate. So what was the problem? What was the big deal about all that?
Mate, I did. That was the problem. I had it made. However, how I thought it would feel when I was 21, when I reached the top, wasn't anything like that. The reality was very different to what I thought it would be when I was 21, and the reality was very different to what it looked like from the outside, because to get there, I'd sacrificed quite a lot. I'd sacrificed my body. I'd gained 5 stone.
Right.
I'd sacrificed my mental health. I was diagnosed bipolar while I lived there. I almost sacrificed my marriage. I sacrificed so many friendships. Following all of the rules. Mm. Put out all the toxic people from your life. 4-hour work week. all of that shit. I did because that's what I thought you had to do. I got there, didn't feel anything like what I thought it would be. I abused my body, I abused my mind, I abused my relationships. And I got to a point where I was like, is this it? Is this it now? When you mentioned Tyson Fury before, loads of people that I've mentioned who struggle with mental health, you've got Tyson Fury, you've got all the guys that I've had Jay Morton, I've had Ollie Ollerton, I've had Ant Middleton, all of these guys get to a certain place where they're in the SAS, they're at the peak of a military career, and they come out and they're like, well, is this it? I spoke to James Haskell, rugby player. He finished his career. He played in the World Cup. Is this it? We've all faced this point where we've got to kind of what you think is the peak, and you kind of feels all right, but it feels nothing like you thought it would. So that was me. Yeah, had everything from the outside, but on the inside, empty, frustrated, angry, exhausted, depressed, anxious. Yeah. Yeah, in a nutshell.
So where did that... you said you were following the rules. What are the rules?
So the rules are the old personal development rules. Cut out all the negative people from your life. I soon found that I was on my own in my beer. Me, my wife, my kids. No one else, because people like to complain. And what I've also realised that, listen, if I'm complaining about negative people all the time, what does that make me? That was it. It became a case of how hard you can grind, how much you can suffer to get there. And then when you get there, just work 4 hours a week. When I was working 4 hours a week, I was bored. I had no friends because I got rid of all the negative people. I'm saying I'd sacrificed everything to get to that point, following all of those old school personal development rules, the whole, like, if you don't want it bad enough, you'll never get it. Winners never quit. Quitters never win. Bleeding's acceptable. Crying's acceptable. Quitting's not. All of those fucking old school personal development, business advice stuff. In the whole outsource the skill. Like, outsourcing the skill left me doing all the shit that I hated doing. You know the old E-Myth thing?
Yeah.
Outsource the skill. And I've since flipped that on its head. People can't believe this. We did 7 figures last year and I do all of the coaching.
Really?
I don't have any coaches working for me. There's just me doing all of the coaches. I work 4 days a week doing that, and people can't understand how I do it. It's because I didn't follow the rules of this time around. I learned all those lessons. Yeah. And you know what? It was the most valuable lesson I've ever learned. People are like, do you have any regrets about that time? I'm like, no, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me, bar my kids.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because you've kind of, as I guess I have in the recent years, learned the hard way. Yeah.
It's the only way I learn. There's no easy way to learn, right?
Yeah, well, it's that gravel rash when you're kind of still feeling that bloody lip and it's all bleeding and you're like, yeah, I really... Yeah.
Well, my coach, the guy that I'm working with right now, he's like, I found out that there's no happy ending to an unhappy journey, for a start. And I learned that the theory doesn't cover the cost of admission. Like, there has to be some price to be paid. And we just paid over the odds to get into a park, or I paid to get into a park that when I got there wasn't that good.
Don't like the rides. I think what's interesting about what you're saying is you'd kind of, through the sort of early noughties, I guess, or the noughties, you'd kind of built up this career, like you say, that's from the outside in, you'd made it. You've got this kind of, I don't know if Instagram was really that much of a thing then, but Instagram-worthy life, right, where everything's polished and beautiful. And you followed all the rules. You'd read all the books. You'd done the right thing. You got your 4-hour work week in. You got it all locked down. But you're unhappy. It's all like you're isolated.
Yeah. Bored. No sense of purpose.
Like you're drifting about.
Yeah.
So where did that lead you then?
Well, it led me to a point where I'd spend all week arguing with people on the internet and all weekend pissed and full of coke.
Really?
It led me to the point, December 17th it was, 2014, back home in England because we are being diagnosed bipolar in Spain. They didn't really treat it there. Right. We've since beaten that, hands down. And we were kind of, our hand was forced to move back to the UK. I mean, there was me, my wife, a 2-year-old and a newborn.
Right.
And my wife's dealing with 3 kids.
Yeah, for
one
sure.
One of them was just in disguise as a man. One of them was just in disguise as a hairy fat man. So we moved back to England and suddenly I had those people who are perceived as negative back in my life. I had more access to coke because I knew more dealers in South Shields. I only knew one in Marbella. So I had that. I'm back with old friends that spent all weekend drinking again. I had all those triggers back. So a few months later, we live near cliffs. I'm on the edge of a cliff ready to go. I couldn't see another way out. I couldn't see the point in continuing. You think about this, I'd reached the peak. I reached what I thought was the peak. I was paying myself 30 grand a month. But do you know what I mean? I was doing all the things that I thought you had to do, and I felt like shit. And I get asked this question a lot because people try and mock me about it on this video that I made about, which is on 6.2 million views or something mad like that. People mock me and like, why was your wife there? Did you take her with you? I'm like, no, I was so volatile back then that my wife would follow me every time I left the house because she wasn't sure whether I was going to come back.
Really?
Yeah. So she'd be in the car with a fucking 6-month-old kid.
Oh.
In the back of the car following me everywhere I went because you never knew whether I was going to come back.
If people haven't seen the Facebook video we just mentioned, just check it out. Like, and it's I believe it was a kind of accident that you even recorded that.
Yeah, I'd already started back then. I recorded that in 2016, so I'd started a transformation at that point. I got into some training again. I'd starting to get a handle on my mental health. I'd been on courses. I traveled all over the world. I started doing a little bit of coaching, but at that time I was still running the marketing business. So I had an old school Glazer Kennedy style paper newsletter business. I was killing it. I hated it. I hated sitting in front of my computer and writing. Yeah. In fact, I did a book deal last year with HarperCollins and we just did audio.
Oh, really?
I was like, listen, I'm probably not going to sit down on my computer and write it, but I'll fucking talk. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So, and the book industry was fucked last year. Completely fucked. So anyway, I had this business then and I've totally forgot where I was up to, mate. So,
and I know we were talking about how you were at everything. You're on the cliffs. Your wife's following you around.
Yes.
And you were kind of...
2016 made the video.
Yeah, 2016 made the video.
So I used to hire this guy back then. It's called Mark Whitehand. He's from Sheffield. Top fucking guy. And he'd come every month and I'd be like, right, I want to improve the quality of my videos here for my marketing business. At the time, I still owned a supplement company as well called Lean Green, still going strong. And we're making marketing videos. He used to come up for one day a month and then chop up 4 or 5 videos, long length, 15 minute ones. And we'd had a long old day recording. Recordings like that over a day is quite challenging. It takes quite a lot of energy. Moving from one scene to the next, fucking spending most of my time waiting for the cameraman to set up.
Yeah,
so
right.
I hate about making videos. I'm fucking standing around. I'm like, mate, I'm ready to talk. So anyway, he's setting up and I'm like, mate, no, actually he's packing up. And I said, mate, listen, come over here. I think I've got something I need to get off my chest. And I just spoke from the heart, no script, spoke from the heart. And then next thing I know it, blows up, and all I spoke about was my experience, and it blew up because, and this was before mental health was trendy.
Yeah, yeah.
Before men's mental health was trendy, there was no mental health awareness. There was no mental health weeks. There was no calm. There was none of that kind of stuff. There was no celebrities getting involved, and I think it blew up because I spoke about it in a way that only someone with experience could speak about it in.
Yeah, yeah.
I used language that men actually use to themselves. It was basically real and it was fucking raw. That's why it blew up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely by accident.
Yeah. What's impressive about it, or impressive is the wrong word perhaps, but go and find out on Facebook. It's you talking and you laying out that story about you on that cliff and what your wife was saying to you and your response to that and what stopped you from doing it. And I tell you, man, I'm a father of kids and I was listening to that and it was speaking to me. Yeah, and I have mental health issues, or have had, which I've stopped taking my meds this year, actually. I was diagnosed with depression, I think, broadly the time you were diagnosed with bipolar. And so I can see in you, you know, and the way you speak, and I've been increasingly more open about my mental health, which has helped me, right? And I can speak from a place of relative authority because I'm living through it and had to take care of that and do something with it. But there was a bit that I just wanted to pick out of that video that really spoke to me. You talked about how you can mask your pain with humor. And I thought, yeah, man, because I'm I like to banter and mess around. Could you speak on that?
Well, this is for me how we cover up our insecurities. And struggling with mental health and struggling in that kind of thing is an insecurity. We're insecure about it. We don't want people to know. So we mask it with humor. One of my favorite ones to use is out of shape guys. Oh, it's all paid for.
Oh yeah,
all paid for this. It's all paid for this. You've got to have it. If you've got a big nail, you need a big hammer. Right? And we do that just to mask our insecurities. So it's like, and I think I did a talk, an event in May time, and it was a big event, 600-700 people on. And I actually talked about the challenges that it was basically, it was coaches, experts, authors who wanted to know how I'd built this thing. And I said, the biggest problem that a lot of these people have is that they're inauthentic. And I hate that word authenticity, by the way. I think if you have to talk about it too much, you're probably full of shit. Mm-hmm. And I said that authenticity is just the absence of inauthenticity. And that what I'm trying to get around to here is that we are inauthentic. We can't be authentic because we're too busy trying to cover up our perceived imperfections and our insecurities. That's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
And us men, we don't want people to know that we're insecure. This is why often people think that the loudest person in the room is the most confident. I find that it's often the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
We mock other people because we're insecure. So when people are trying to dig me out, I'm okay with it. And I get death threats on the fucking weekly.
Really?
I get people telling me I should kill myself on the daily. I should have jumped. That video also has, if you read the comments, should have jumped.
Really?
If you're any kind of man, you would have jumped.
Mm.
Like, it's all sorts of shit. If you had any balls, you would have jumped. So, and I'm okay with that because these guys are just trying to cover up their insecurities.
Yeah, yeah, exactly what I was thinking.
It's just what we do. We don't want anyone to know that we have a perceived weakness.
Mm.
And that's all it is, a perceived weakness. We think that other men will think we're weak because we speak about it. We think that other men will think we're weak because we have problems, when in fact the opposite's true.
So what's your really, since you've been speaking more openly about it, what's been your experience having opened up? So you kind of started to spill your guts.
It's incredibly it's incredibly liberating and powerful because no one can say anything about me that I haven't already said.
Hmm.
I feel like the most powerful person in the room often because I'm like, what are you going to say about me that I haven't already said? I've owned all of my imperfections. I've owned all of my insecurities. So I feel unfuckwithable. That's my experience. I'm unfuckwithable. What are you going to say about me that I haven't already said?
And how's that, you know, when you, so you're kind of oriented and grounded.
Yes.
Because of that. So how does that sort of channel itself for you and your business?
Ooh, it's a great question. First up, I would like to put that whole thing in a comparison frame. The challenges that I have in business are nothing compared to that. Anything that comes up, I'm like, good, I've handled worse, mate.
Yeah.
And this is why I was talking about the Goggins challenge earlier to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that with a lot of people. I actually did it on my own. I did the same route the whole time. Everyone was mixing it up. They wanted variety. I did a straight line for 2 miles and a straight line back on the coast road on my own. Because I wanted that. And I actually said to people, I'm like, I didn't find it physically hard, but it wasn't that bad. Because I had a comparison frame.
Mm.
I've done not longer stuff, but I did, for example, I did the fan dance, Penny Fan, original SAS selection. I found that harder than the Goggins challenge.
Right.
I did a half marathon with no training. I've been in fights.
Mm.
I've competed in jiu-jitsu. So I didn't find the Goggins challenge that bad, really. I mean, my feet nearly fell off.
Mm.
I had really bad shin splints. I couldn't walk for a week after, but it wasn't that bad, but it's because I had a comparison frame. And it's the same with business.
Mm.
Like, someone's talking shit about me on the internet. Fuck me, mate. I've overcame suicidal thoughts. That's nothing.
Mm.
So for me, it means that, again, I feel unfuckwithable. There's not... And again, I think a lot of challenges that people have in business, they don't have a business challenge. They have a them challenge most of the time. We know what to do to grow our businesses. We know what to do to get a handle on shit. It's us that's the problem. It's not staff. When people blame staff, I'm like, mate, there's a common denominator here. It's you. When people talk about negative people, I'm like, if you keep moving from negative people to negative people, you're having the same relationships just with different people. The common denominator is you, mate.
Well, it's funny. I listened to Paul's interview with a guy called Jeff Thompson last night. Yeah. And I randomly clicked on this because I thought it just the first sentence of the description sounded interesting. And I was locked on for 90 minutes. And just to echo what he was saying to you in that podcast is what you're sending out is what you're getting back.
Yes.
And he had a very violent life. And he realized this common denominator was his presence in the violence.
Yeah.
And I think there's something really in that here. If people can, it's easy to point the finger at staff, business colleagues, clients, suppliers, Boris Johnson, whatever. right? You can point your finger at lots of people, but you ultimately, the buck's, if you're, you know, running your own thing, it's going to stop with you. Yeah. And I think that kind of sense of ownership is refreshing. I think that's why I think it resonates with what you're saying is you could have owned it.
And here's what I know. If I hadn't owned my imperfections, if I hadn't owned my insecurities, guess what? People have no problem pointing them out. Tell you right now, once you start to make a little bit of a name in business, people will have no problem pointing out your insecurities. No, people will have no problem pointing out your imperfections, especially if you're a bloke, right? It's known, people call it banter.
Well, it is funny, actually, because I think this comes back to that whole thing about humor.
Yes. I know you're dying to talk about this. I've never had this conversation before, if I'm honest.
Well, I mean, because the thing I've just set up a podcast called Honey, I Blew Up the Business about the time I literally nearly went bankrupt and lost my family, right? And it's a bit of a meme, almost the front picture, and it's like a joke.
Yeah.
But this was the worst period of my life, but on every metric, right? Like, as you described, finance.
What's mad, mate? What's mad? What I love here is it's a great transition is because we blame the business. We'll always blame the business because our mind's always looking for a way to justify our emotional state.
Yes.
So if I'm fucked, it must be the business. If I'm miserable, it must be the business.
Well, it's,
you know what I mean? If I'm unhappy in this relationship, it must be my wife. If I can't make progress in my life, it must be because of the town I'm from. Fuck off.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, what's beautiful about this is the, I read the book Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink.
Jocko's the man.
Right, so extreme ownership. It's all my fault, right? Now, tell me, I could point a finger at a lot of people, but I was the one, it was my bat and ball, my game, I messed it up.
So it's crazy. This is nothing but a fucking finger switch. My coach calls it switching from to me. Everything happens to me. Pointing the finger of blame, where there's three fingers pointing back at you. You start to turn the finger around. I think a better way to put this is the problem is with the blame and fault thing is that there's two ways to take that. One of them is like, oh, great, it's my fault. Mm. And some people will use that as even more of a reason to take on an identity of a victim.
Yeah, right.
So I'm like, and that's what I love about the word ownership. I'm taking ownership or I'm taking charge. I'm taking back power. Because when you're blaming somebody else, you put all the power for how you feel in their hands.
Exactly.
It's like drinking poison and expecting them to die.
And the thing is, because it's a sort of short-term solace. It's like it gets you out of the problem because it's not my fault.
It's temporarily for your better. I love it.
Yeah.
I love
that. But it's a medium-term, like long-term disaster zone because you can't, like you say, you're giving away the power, so you can't fix it because you didn't do it. But if you own it and like just accept it, then all you got to do is pick up this like sack of rocks and trudge uphill with it, right? And every day is a slog, but that's what I did. But I think what's interesting, you mentioned there about the identity of a victim, right? Now this is the role of the ego, right? And I know you talk a lot about this, but the victim sort of identity that you can adopt very easily when things are going badly is a form of ego. It's a sense of identity that you defend and protect. I can't, you know, I couldn't do anything because I was, this is all forced on me.
You just don't get it. Everything happens to me. It's like the war cry of someone who's at the victim phase of consciousness is blame.
There you go.
The war cry is usually it's different for me.
But this idea of ego, and like you talk in the video about you kind of justify yourself, narratives like, oh, I'm different, my business is different.
Yeah.
How have you seen, because you work with men predominantly, and how does the ego get in the way of people?
I love it, mate. Do you know what? I think people have the wrong idea about ego as well. I think people think ego is about, oh, he's got a big ego because he's bragging. He needs to get over himself. I get that a lot. I'm like, well, actually, I've already gotten over myself. That's why I'm able to speak the way that I speak. People that haven't gotten over themselves are the people that hide it.
Mm.
So their ego is actually bigger. So my concept of ego is actually your ego will try and protect you from perceived emotional pain. So that's why it's easy to blame people. That's why it's easy to say shit like, oh, I do it, but I've got this fear of success. People might criticize me. I have this fear of failure. I'm a perfectionist. I'm like, no, that's just your ego trying to protect you from perceived emotional pain. Mm. That's all you got to see. All that pain is perception. All of it is. This is all this is. All we're doing here when we're talking about the finger switch, mate, is they're just changing perception, really. Your hand can stay in the same place, and your head can move and see a different perspective. Like your finger could be pointing the same direction. You could just move your head in front of it. Actually, yeah, it's not them. It's my thoughts about them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and it's that idea. Your mind creates the reality.
Yeah, mate, I got asked a question from my coach last week, right? And it's a bit of a hippie coach that I'm having at the minute, right? We're talking about consciousness.
Yeah,
we're talking about the whole power versus force thing from Hawkins's book, right?
Okay.
He said to me, he said, Paul, we've been working together for a little while now, and you know that there's an outer world, physical world, and an inner world, metaphysical. This question's fucked with me all week. Which one's more real? I'm like, what the fuck? And I'm still on this journey, and I know you mentioned this before about spirituality and that. I'm still on this journey of figuring this out.
Mm.
And he's like, which one? And honestly, it's blown my head off all week, but that's all it is. Like, which one is more real? And what you find is that your outer world will follow your inner world. Your inner outer world, physical world can be exactly the same, but if your inner world changes, you can go from fear to abundance. You can go from hate to gratitude. There's a bunch of things that we can do just by a little shift in here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and it's funny, like people talk about mindset a lot now. It's a real buzzword. But yeah. I think it's like a filter. Like you just said, it's like you can filter that information differently, right? And so you can be...
100%.
Right? It's a data point and you choose how you receive that. So this is the balance between the external and the internal, the sort of metaphysical and the physical.
Yeah.
And there's actually, I mean, just this is a bit, again, lateral move, but I watched a documentary about a guy called David Bohm, who's a physicist. Mm-hmm. Einstein said he was his spiritual successor, this guy, right? He's a quantum physicist. And his theory, and I'm going to really butcher this, but that your thoughts are forms that go into the quantum field and impact the future.
100%. Have you seen Joe Dispenza's work yet?
No, I haven't.
Oh, bro. So I am terrible at learning online, right? Which has been a nightmare during COVID. You know me, mate. I love a live event. I love being in a room.
Yeah.
I fucking love being in a room, particularly if I'm the center of attention, right? And don't pretend that you're not the same, right? So, and I love a room, but the last year or so, I haven't really been able to do that. I mean, I've run 3 events in the last year just because I timed them right. And we actually have one next Friday. But the whole learning platform online, I really struggle with. I get distracted. I'm on fucking Kajabi. I'm on these, I get really distracted, right? And so when I join a program, like how many live sessions are there? Because I'll turn up for a live session and I'll pay attention. But if it's all recorded, I know myself too well to think I'm going to sit there and not get distracted by Instagram and Facebook and WhatsApp and pictures of Big Barry with a giant dick. Do you know the lockdown guy with a giant dick?
Yeah.
Never seen as many pictures of him. But this, there's a channel and you'll get targeted by Facebook ads for this channel called Gaia.
Oh, yeah, I have seen that, yeah.
And there's a course on, there's a 12 episodes. It's called Rewired by Dr. Joe Dispenza. And it's on Prime Video now, so you can watch it on your TV.
Excellent, right, okay.
It's blowing me head off because there's no distractions. I can leave the phone out of the room and I can just watch it on TV, which is refreshing. But his whole thing is what you just spoke about, creating your reality internally or in your inner world first, and then your outer world will follow. It just takes a while to catch up.
Yeah. The documentary I watch is called Infinite Potential, and I'd really recommend it. I think you can rent it.
I've heard of it, mate. You know,
yeah. It's really like what sort of struck me was these are really really credible scientists talking about stuff that basically the Dalai Lama is a big fan of this guy, and he's a spiritual practice for thousands and thousands of years has intuited what now scientists are beginning to realize is potentially real. Quantifiable.
This Joe Dispenza does all the fucking, he'll have people meditate on this and do what's called active meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll measure brain, he's measuring brain waves and the data is fucking unbelievable.
Really?
And he talks through the data, he talks through all of the data in this series. It's really cool. And he's actually in London for 5 days in November.
Oh, really?
Live event. I'm fucking there, mate.
I'll be completely, mate. We'll have the...
I think it's like the XL Arena and that, man.
Really?
My coach went to Mexico to do a retreat with him and there was 2,000 people meditating at the same time. Imagine that.
My life. Well, yeah. I'm going to check that out for sure. So what's interesting here is this whole idea of how you manage, control, tame, shape, form your mind mm-hmm. will impact what goes on in your life in IRL, right? Yes. Yeah. Now, so your role with your ego and your relationship with yourself is fundamental to that, in my humble opinion, because yes. like you, I had to get over myself, accept yes. responsibility and work on myself. And this is actually I'm just going to go into the bit of the, I'm really interested to speak to you about, which is this sort of, you had this ultimate rock bottom, right? And you discovered what I'm going to call a quest to learn. Mm. And mm. by learning, by opening up, by getting over yourself, mm. you built a new career, as far as I can see. There's this kind of a guy who's channeling this information to men, particularly, in a way that these men can hear, right?
You've okay. just hit the nail on the head, yeah.
So for, now I get that, because I can, yeah. you know, I'm not the same as you, but I've gone through a process where I had to rebuild a philosophy of life mm-hmm. to rescue myself. So mm-hmm. I had to open up and learn. And, you know, I've read a lot, and I've really, really, I mean, I get a lot of feedback from mates saying, mate, you just read all the time. What's up with you? But I'm on a quest to try to save myself. So I'm interested. So when you, what drove your quest to learn? When you were at rock bottom, what switched you onto that?
Well, I've kind of always been into learning, because you don't build the kind of business that I had back in 2014 without a bit of study and a bit of learning. But back then I was learning about copywriting, I was learning about email marketing, I'm learning about selling, I'm learning about persuasion, if you like, mm. which has clearly helped me in this new business.
Sure.
Right? You don't be in business for 20 years without knowing a bit, right?
Yeah.
I think the personal development thing happened. I'll tell you exactly when it happened. It was actually before my meltdown. I'd been struggling for a while. I'd had these regular kind of episodes. That's what bipolar disorder is like. You have these dramatic highs, dramatic lows. Funny enough, there's no coincidence with how much I was drinking and sniffing. There'd be a very, very, very high likelihood that what goes up must come down.
Yeah, right? Well, you helped your bipolar along a bit there.
I did. So I remember getting tagged in a video by this guy called Gary J. White. And he was basically speaking in a way that spoke to me, like I do now for many men. And I flew out to California like 2 weeks later, give him 10 bags. And that was kind of the start of it for me. I'm like, okay, it woke me up. It turned me on to meditation. It turned me on to the work of Byron Katie. It eventually turned me on to Dan Sullivan, because he'd been in Strategic.
Yeah, right, yeah.
What else? It led me to working with the people at the Debbie Ford Institute. That led me on to people like, I'd heard of Robbins before, obviously. It led me on to John DeMartini, who I work with now. And it just, it stemmed from there. And I think that from that Dr. John DeMartini work, I figured out what my values actually were, not what, most people have the wrong idea of values. They think, oh, values like honesty. I'm like, well, you're not always honest, are you? Those are social idealisms, right? So mostly our life will demonstrate what it is we actually value, right? So I figured out my values, and that, one of my values turned out to be learning, but more importantly, teaching. And I can't teach something that I haven't done. So it kind of all stemmed from there. I feel, in fact, I did a training for my guys yesterday, and I said, we make it very difficult for ourselves to feel good and easy for ourselves to feel like shit. Easy, right? And I said that I was saying, what emotions would you like to experience more of? And they were saying things like inspiration, optimism, confidence. And I just had them complete this sentence, which was, I feel inspired when. Loads of them couldn't complete the sentence. I'm like, well, how the fuck can you expect to feel inspired if you don't know how to do it? And one of my things that came up for me when I did it was, I feel inspired when I learn new things. I feel inspired when I see progress. I learned that in Strategic Coach about, I still do the strategic confidence thing every day.
Right, really?
Still every day without fail. At least 3 wins. Like, what was it called back then? Positive
focus.
Positive focus, yeah. So I call it strategic confidence, because I'm building confidence.
Just explain what that is for people who aren't aware of what a positive focus.
Write down 3 wins every day.
So 3 things that have gone well.
Yeah. 3 yeah. things that have gone well, how you can build on them. And then every week, I do 5. What are the 5 biggest wins this week? Every quarter, I write down 20. What are my 20 biggest wins? What are my 20 magic moments?
And why is that important?
Because people give up when they don't see progress. They feel stressed, frustrated, annoyed when they don't see progress. And the only thing they're not doing is they don't know how to measure progress. So they don't feel confident. So for me, it's important because I can get momentum. People think you have confidence. Confidence is something that you have. Confidence is something that you cultivate. And I cultivate it by showing my brain, by showing my mind that I'm winning, even if it's tiny. Mm. I'm fucking winning. Because guess what it wants to do when I write that down and it makes me feel good? It wants more.
Yeah, well, it's funny.
It's more of the same. Like most people are going 90 miles an hour to nowhere. And the only reason they're going to nowhere is because they don't know what's working.
Well, you said actually something about your time in sort of the early teenies, how you'd kind of built this success, but you got up the wrong ladder.
I built something I hated.
Yeah. And just to this point here of like the sort of regular wins, often I find you're busy and you're at the end of the day and you feel a little bit down.
Yes.
That's natural because you're tired. Do you know what I mean? It's like, so having that little moment at the end of the day just gives it a little, it's that filter again. It just clicks in from being negative because I'm tired and I've had a shitty email.
And there's a lot of, there's a lot of research saying that the way you go to bed feeling is the way you'll feel when you wake up the next day. A lot of research on that. Really? So going to bed feeling confident and like I've made progress, massive.
Well, and it's so simple as well. That's a really great.
It's so fucking simple. And I get a lot of, I teach about, inside of my program that I run monthly in Startball 28, we get between 100, 200 people a month coming through this program. And this is something I teach them. And I get a lot of people going, oh, well, I haven't had any wins. I'm like, you have. You're just not looking hard enough. You just got, people have different rules about what wins are.
Yeah,
the challenges start happening when we compare every day to our best day.
Yes.
Or when we compare our wins with somebody else's. I'm like, I'll sometimes post mine or I'll do mine. Like, well, I haven't had anything near you. I'm like, well, you're not living my life. The only difference between me and you is I've got more training. I've showed up to more classes than you.
Yeah.
I remember this back in 2018, 2019, maybe. I did a jiu-jitsu workshop with John Kavanagh, Conor McGregor's coach.
Wow.
And I felt a little bit out of place. I was still a white belt. I'd only been training a few months. And he wanted a demo on me. And I was like, man, I feel like a fucking idiot. I don't know how I can't do most of these moves. He said, what color belt are you? I said, white. He said, what color belt am I? He said, black. He said, the only difference between me and you is that I've done more sessions than you.
Yeah.
That's it. A black belt's just a white belt that didn't quit.
Yeah.
So the challenges start happening when we compare that whole comparison frame. Listen, when you're a Sunderland fan, a win is a fucking win. if it's 1-0 and it's gone in off somebody's ass, I don't care. You'll take anything you can get, right? Any hole's a goal.
Well, I'm a sort of Sheffield Wednesday fan, so it's even worse.
Oh, Jesus. We'll be playing each other next season.
Ah, well, yeah, there we go. Well,
no, that's mad. I was thinking about this at the weekend, right? We've now got a billionaire owner, right, who's 24.
Right.
But there's a salary cap in League One, so it doesn't matter. Not bad.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's mad.
So there's this kind of whole thing around raising. You talk about people that can't even see the inspiration because they can't even see it themselves. So it's kind of, I call this idea of raising consciousness you talked about. It's just like seeing things. That is raising your consciousness.
Yes.
Having gratitude. So okay, a win. What is a win? Well, I'll tell you what. It was maybe sunny today. Maybe I had a kind of, thing. I'm breathing. You know, I can actually get out of the house and I can walk and run. Yeah. And these things are wins. I think
listen, here's what's interesting, Dan, is that last Saturday I had a drink and it was like my second drink this year. I wasn't even pissed. I was in London. I was at restaurant Gordon Ramsay. I took two of my mates and my wife. We had a good day. Mm. And I actually went there and back the same day. So it wasn't a big session. But last week was a bit like I was running through treacle. It's hard. The whole week was a struggle because I felt like shit. Like, people forget this. We talk about mental health awareness. We talk about talking. And I'm like, let's tackle the fucking real issue. You fucking drink too much, mate.
Yeah.
None of these mental health charities want to fucking talk about it.
Mm.
You can talk all you want, but if you're going out and getting wasted every weekend, your words are fucking wasted.
Yep.
Anyway, I love a rant about that. I'm like, no one wants to fucking address it. There's never been more mental health support, never been more mental health awareness, never been more access to help, never been more charities, and the numbers are going up because none of them have the fucking balls to talk about the real issue.
Well, and actually, just to expand on that, I agree with you. And I'm a man who had depression, has depression, depressive tendencies. Mm-hmm. I've had a business and lots of stuff, like a very high pressure life. Here's the thing that's changed me: working on my philosophy of life, right, and executing on that. So, stopping drinking, eating better, exercising more, being more gratitude, being more proactive.
You're the vehicle that drives your life forwards, right?
Mm.
And we if we have a family, we're the leader, whether we like it or not. Mm. And your life can either be a warning or example, right? But if you're a vehicle, you can't put diesel in a petrol engine. and then wonder why it's not fucking working.
Yeah, yeah.
Mental health needs physical support, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, and I think there's a bit here, it does get a bit fetishized. It's like, let's talk about mental health and be compassionate. And it gets, like a lot of Western medicine, it's like we talk about mental health and then we talk, oh, well, that's different to your body because it's different. But of course it isn't. It's like all connected.
Try thinking about a lemon.
I'm thinking about it.
What happens?
Think about a lemon.
Squeeze it.
Yeah.
Think about squeezing it.
Yeah.
Your mouth will start fucking salivating.
Yeah, it is actually, yeah.
That's what I mean. And one thing I speak about quite a lot is actually, if I, you can generate these feelings on demand. We're just very good at creating the shit ones.
Mm.
So I'm like, if you had to think of it, if you wanted to feel proud, which is a nice feeling, just if you wanted to, what have you got going on in your life or what's happened in your life that makes you feel proud? And people can always answer that question. Mm. I'm like, look how easy it is to feel proud. Then I say, think about something that makes you pissed off. Guess how you feel? Pissed off. Mm. Focus is controlled by questions. I get what I'm focused on.
Mm.
But the problem is we ask ourselves shit questions because we've never been taught any different. I'm convinced that everyone wants to live a more positive, empowered life. We just haven't been shown how.
Yeah, yeah. And it's actually the it's quite simple, but it's just having that kind of awareness to do it. Yeah, and the discipline to do it too. We're heading towards the end of our time. I've got two things I want to talk to you about. But the first one, and I think probably the most important one, is the rumble strip.
Yeah.
Right? I listened to your podcast with Jeff Thompson, and you talked about a concept called the rumble strip.
Yeah.
Please explain that for our listeners.
So the rumble strip is like on the motorway. When you take your eyes off the motorway, you end up on that strip, and the car starts fucking vibrating. Your shit car, it might even fall apart. Right? But the rumble strip is a reminder that you are maybe distracted from what your life's about. Maybe you're distracted from your mission. I think a big challenge that men have these days is that they're udderless, they're directionless. They are lost, they are stuck, and they have no sense of purpose. In other words, they have no target.
Mm.
How do you know where you're going if there's no target?
Mm.
How can you not go around in circles when you don't have targets? And this is as simple as setting visions, goals, missions. Men are supposed to have animals to hunt. We're supposed to hunt animals. Sorry, vegans. We're supposed to have an animal to hunt. We're supposed to have a mission. If not, we have a sad case of wandering men. We're just wandering through life, stumbling through life with no direction, no purpose, etc., etc. I've got no idea what the question was. I just wanted to say that.
That's a good point.
The rumble strip.
So
the rumble strip, if I don't know where I'm going.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And so what would the, how is, the so how the rumble is, how do, what happens then in a rumble strip? What's the feedback?
We experience feelings that we don't want to experience. We experience disempowering emotions. We experience negativity, disillusionment, anger, disappointment, frustration, pessimism. That's the rumble strip. And all that is an alarm clock that you've been distracted, or an alarm clock that you need to ask yourself a better question. An alarm clock to change something. An alarm clock to step the fuck up. An alarm clock to get refocused again. So I actually almost embrace these rumble strips. So that drink the other week, a second drink this year, someone asked me, why did you drink after all you've learned and all you know? I was like, well, I wanted to.
Because
let's face it, sometimes it's fun as fuck when you're doing it. There's no immediate downside. You get instant gratification, like any bad habit. Instant gratification, no immediate downside. Good habits don't have immediate gratification a lot of the time. When you go to the gym, you don't get fit, you get fucking sore. So the rumble strip analogy is just like a wake-up call that something needs to be different. And that could just be the case of asking a better question. So I get a lot of people, I probably get about 400 DMs a week, right? I get a lot of contact from people. Can't answer them all. And a lot of the time, people are telling me how they feel. And I'm like, you focus on how you don't want to feel. When you focus on that, you get more of the same. This is a question I ask them a lot of time. But how do you want to feel? This is the only thing I ask them. How do you want to feel? They don't even know. They know how they don't want to feel. It's like getting in a taxi. The taxi driver saying, where do you want to go? And you saying, not here. People are great at telling me what they don't want. People are great at saying how they don't want to feel. But they don't know how they want to feel. And then even worse, they don't know how to feel like that. Like happiness. Happiness is at the end of a fucking rainbow.
So what you got here is an issue about rudderless men, or let's call it people in life, who have have not got a target to aim at, right?
Except to make it a Friday so they can get pissed again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there you go. So there's these kind of like short-term targets, right? These kind of pleasure, like we're on Pleasure Island targets where we can get pissed and have a nice time and get laid and run around and do cool stuff and wear cool clothes or whatever. But you're not actually moving anywhere meaningful.
But that's the thing, Dan. I think that what I found out is that one of the questions I was asking, I said to my wife, I said, how do people do this? Then I realized how they do it. They just don't make progress in their life. They get pissed and they can't make progress. The thing that's in my head at the minute about boozing, because the temptation's been quite high recently because of the Euros, because bars are back open, because beer gardens are open, because you can see your mates again, because there's a lot going on. And the thing that's helping me not drink right now is I heard someone say the word ethanol. That's what alcohol is. My body's not supposed, I'm not supposed to put ethanol in my body. Like that, just that little, can you see that? Just a little language shift. That little language shift. I'm like, fucking hell, I'm poisoning myself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No wonder I feel like I'm poisoning myself and then expecting to feel great.
It's a really good shout. I mean, it's funny. I've been drinking like basically not at all, but occasionally I fall off the wagon because I like it.
Yeah.
Right?
Because it's fun as fuck.
Oh, yeah. But then it's poison and I'm like, it messes me all up with all this other stuff I'm doing, which is really a bit more fun. The bit I want to focus on in what you all said there, which I think is really, really interesting, is these emotions you're feeling are the rumble strip, right? So if you're feeling these things, I think this is a great takeaway for all of us. If you're feeling these emotions, negative emotions, you got to question, what motorway am I on? Yeah. And where am I heading?
Yeah, where am I heading? How do I want to feel?
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I think the thing we've got to remember, Dan, is that we didn't end up on the rumble strip by accident. So I've got to start looking at why I've ended up on the rumble strip again. And what's important for us to understand as well is that we're supposed to feel all of the emotions. You can't turn them off.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Right? See, the thing is, this, the big one that I'm on at the minute is just this happiness thing. I'm like, you can feel happy anytime you want, on demand. Do you know what happiness is? Is the result of thinking happy thoughts. The problem is that most people don't give themselves permission to think happy thoughts until the outside world matches the pictures.
Yeah, well, as that, well, I think the bit there I've learned is about gratitude.
Yeah.
You can be happy if you are actually gratitude for, you can breathe. Hey, listen, I did a, just for all it's worth, I ran a 42-mile race on Saturday.
Monster.
Right? I finished at 5 a.m. So I ran 42 miles up the Pennine Way.
Monster.
Right? And I was in the middle of it and I was chatting to a woman and she said, isn't it amazing? We're physically capable of doing this. Right? Yeah. We can do it. Like, there's people who can't do it. Like, I'm out. I was in the countryside. It was so hard. I can't tell you. But I was able to do it as a choice in my life. And I thought, thank you. I physically, I've got the legs that can do it. I'll have to work
on it. We had an event. We did. We just had a day out with some of the lads, about 50 of the lads from my program. And we went up Dovedale.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we had a blast. And some of the lads are whining. And we've got a guy there doing it with one leg on crutches. I'm like, stop fucking, go and tell Tyler.
Exactly.
You're complaining. Go and tell Tyler about your blisters.
Exactly. And I was thinking, if I was in a wheelchair, I couldn't be on this route. It's like a narrow, rocky path in the middle of nowhere. And
I've got a podcast recommendation for you. I interviewed a guy called Sean Gash.
Oh,
Tyson Fury's mate.
All right.
He's done like fucking, I think he tried to do Kilimanjaro in a wheelchair.
Really?
He did one mountain in a wheelchair and his leg fell off. I'm not even kidding, but he couldn't feel it. He got his leg trapped in the wheelchair.
Oh, what? He's actually...
Yeah. So the wheelchair was fucked. Didn't know why the wheelchair was fucked. And I looked down and his leg had fell off the wheelchair and got caught up in the wheel and got all butchered.
Oh, my God.
Mate, his story's incredible. I did a podcast with him. Tyson Fury, who should I interview next? And he said to me, Sean Gash. And I got Sean on and he's hilarious as well.
Really?
I'll give people some perspective.
Yeah, well, and this is the thing, is that you can have... Happiness is a funny term. It's very ephemeral, right? And people think, well, I'm not happy. I'm skinned. I've been made redundant. I've got bad things going on. And that's true. But if you kind of say, well, I can walk to the shops, right? That's the thing I can do, right? And I'm in a society which isn't trying to kill me. And there's a lot of places.
We've never had more opportunities.
Oh, yeah. And never. So like we're at the end of our time here and I'm like, I knew it happened. We start gabbing and we go, for bloody ever. Right. I'm going to ask everybody this in one sentence. What is the one a piece of advice that entrepreneurs should ignore?
It would be something along the lines of delegation. and delegating the reason you started the business. Fuck that. You'll end up with a business where you're doing cash flow forecasts, running fucking meetings, being an HR person, interviewing people. I didn't get into business to do cash flow forecasts and balance sheets. I got into business to fucking help people. So I set up my business where it's never dramatic. I'm never doing anything that I hate. I only do things that I value the highest, which energizes me, which brings in more profit, which inspires my team, which means that people ask me what my end game is. I'm like, I haven't got one. That would indicate that I hate what I do.
I love that. I
fucking love what I do. So guess what? I set my business up so I can do more of it. Dan Sullivan would call it my unique ability.
Right, yeah. I think that
why would I delegate? And it's a mistake that, let's say personal trainers, for example, because I've worked with a lot of those. Some of the most popular ones in the world, actually. And the first thing that they delegate is the training. And they end up counting toilet rolls. Why wouldn't you just create your schedule so that you can train more people in less time? Instead of delegating somebody else to do the training so that you can do cash flow forecasts and Facebook ads and fucking check your emails and that. Fuck that. That's not for me. Figure out what you love about your business and set it up so that you can do more of it, not less of it. That's what people do. I didn't get in a business to manage people.
Yeah, there you go. That's bob on. And I think that you mentioned in passing earlier about the journey you're on and enjoying the journey you're on. That's not just waiting for the destination. And in fact, it's interesting, your story itself, you were chasing a destination back in the early teens.
Yeah.
And you got to the wrong destination. Yeah. So actually,
I was leaning up against the wrong building.
There you go. And so I think there's something in here, I think, for all of us. And for me, I'm really getting out of this is, enjoy the journey and listen for that rumble strip and just be conscious and aware of it.
You'll never build a life you love doing shit that you love.
Yeah, there you go.
There's no happy ending to an unhappy journey.
That's the line. Happy ending to an unhappy journey. That is going to go on my t-shirt, which I produce next week.
I love it.
Wear it every day and remember that line.
I just ordered 200 t-shirts with Big Dick Energy wrote on them for my guys.
I want one of them.
Get that Big Dick Energy.
Right. Well, I suggest that I might try and bag one of them. But if I'm allowed, you may just come to one of your coaching courses. That'll be where it should be at. I personally am buzzing off of that.
Me too.
As I knew I would. And in fact, when we stop recording, hang on for a minute, I just want to check in with you. But please, everyone, send your love, gratitude, thanks through the universe to Paul Mort.
Thank you so much for having me on, mate. I've had a blast.
Well, I've had a blast too. And listen, love to see you, mate. Keep doing what you're doing. I love it. And I want to see you. I want to see you live on tour.
Come on.
All right, love. Cheers. See you soon. Bye.
If you want to receive the top 5 tidbits, the nuggets, the insights from each episode in your inbox every week, head up to honeyibluupthebusiness.com. Yes, the snappily titled honeyibluupthebusiness.com, and enter your email address. And we're going to get the best bits. We're going to collate them together and we're going to send them to you. So you don't have to write them down when listening to the podcast. Yes, nice and easy. So get up there, enter your email address, get the tips, all good. And I've got to say before I go that this podcast is generously supported by my company, The Tech Department. Thank you, guys. They are indulging me as I'm pursuing this little creative project. If you want to find a company that helps make your technology better so that gets your business better as well, head up to thetechdept.com. So on behalf of everybody here, thanks for listening. See you next time.